When we say we live in a city built on a river, what we really mean is we live in a city built on two sides of a river, north and south. The river itself, to most people, is an obstacle to be crossed, or the place where things end. Streets end when they get to the river. The city market ends when it gets to the river. Your walk or bike ride probably ends when you get to the river. But not today, because today we're crossing the river figuratively and also literally on a bike. Plus, how the Northland plays into the life of the city. I'm Gina Kaufman. That's coming up on Central Standard after this news. On a sunny afternoon just last week, our reporter Suzanne Hogan went on a bike ride. Her goal was to cross one of Kansas City's biggest physical obstacles, the Mighty Mo. That's right, the river. She started at 10th and Main.
Riding north on Main now. It's really windy. Okay, turned right to 8th Street, going up a pretty big hill. The guy just passed me with a motor attached to his bike. Seen a lot of those recently.
Suzanne planned her route specifically to go over the Heart of America Bridge.
Telling me to the bicyclist should take a right here. Oh, there's a bike path. Huh, okay. I'll take that. Actually kind of a fun little ride.
Suzanne has now returned from her bike ride. She's sitting with me in the studio now. I'm Gina Kaufman. Welcome to Central Standard, Suzanne.
Thanks, Gina. Thanks for having me.
Any tips or pointers for listeners who just got inspired to go on a bike ride over the river?
Well, I think you can hear it in my voice. I was surprised at how fun and easy it was. And actually that there were bike route signs. That's something that I've seen come up in the past 2 or 3 years more, that when you are on a bike, it's kind of nice to follow those. And I've found that I'm typically surprised with how nice the routes are.
You're the kind of person who's out riding a bike more often than not, so it's very much an everyday activity for you. Had you biked over the river before?
I had, and it had been a long time ago. So up until 2010, there were no separated ways for people to get across the Missouri River if you were biking or walking. So, when they were talking about reconstructing the Paseo Bridge and the Kit Bond Bridge, they basically were thinking about there are advocates who are trying to make there be bike ped as part of that plan. And that initially the state and MoDOT decided that that was not going to be part of the plan. And so as a compromise, what they did was they retrofitted the Choteau Bridge and then the Heart of America Bridge to have these basically paths that bicyclists and walkers could go on. On the Heart of America, it's just going northbound, but on Choteau,
So you can get to north of the river from here, and then going the other way is...
You have to go back that same way. So as you're biking across, you're actually passing people, walking, you know, and it's spacious enough. It could be a little wider, so that is one thing. But that was just part of the retrofit. That was all the space that they had. And on Choteau, they had enough to be able to do north and south.
And those are changes just over the last, 5 years?
Yeah, 2010. And it's interesting because as a person who rides my bike around a lot, and I do have a car and I've crossed over those bridges, I do see people using it. And doing the story, you know, I reached out to places like the Mid-America Regional Council to get a sense of how many people are using these new facilities. And they said they really don't have the numbers yet, that they haven't been figuring out the ways to count that, but it's something that they're planning to do in the future. So
how bikeable would you say that commute really is from north of the river to the heart of the city or vice versa?
It really depends on where you're coming from and where you're going to. I mean, so to get on the Heart of America Bridge, the actual bike path that you're supposed to take redirects you down into Columbus Park. Now, I did that on a separate occasion. On this one, I decided to not go that way. I just turned left on Cherry, which actually, it is a bike route. It does have a bike route sign, but you are at one point crossing a ramp that has oncoming highway traffic.
Yikes.
And it can be a little scary, and you definitely want to yield and there is a divot so that you can cross and get up a ramp and make it onto the bridge safely. But it is something that it's scary. There's cars going 45 miles an hour. It can be intimidating. But once you get on there, I will say I was very pleasantly surprised. Yeah, there was glass. But, you know, that describes most roadways, I feel like, in our city. I mean,
so I feel like the verdict here is that the bridges themselves, like the river part, is not bad. The getting on and off those bridges
that
can be.
That bridge in particular. And then so I crossed over once I was north of the river. I went over to Shoto, took Armor, which is what you use, like Google Transit. There's like a bicycling option. And it's decent. It definitely helps to get out there and do it yourself because you learn some things of like, okay, next time maybe I would take a different route. But Armor on bike was a little scary when you're going around 35 because you're basically crossing also where cars are getting on and off ramps. Not much of a shoulder. But once I got beyond the highway, it was actually really nice. Like out by Cerner, I found it to be a pretty pleasant ride.
Well, as a person who travels the city, not just in your car, but also by bike and on foot, what do you think you understand about a physical geographic barrier like a river that the car riding listeners might not be used to considering?
Well, it takes, you know, depending on traffic, about a minute to cross any of these bridges if you're driving. If you're on your bike, it's going to take about 15 minutes. And that depends on also where you're, you know, where you're going to in the end, you know. But if you're walking, you know, that it can really take double that amount, you know. And so depending on where you're going to, it takes a lot more planning. And also there is a different fear factor, you know, like when I'm not saying that you should be fearful, but you definitely should ride very defensively and cautiously because people, you know, the most common cause of fatalities and injuries is distracted driving and walking and bicycling. So I think that's another thing, like when you're in a car, it's easy to forget that you're in a car and that there's pedestrians out there too, and that it's a lot more intimidating when you're on the ground and you're being passed by, you know, vehicles going at a really high speed.
Your literal crossing of the river did not stop with biking. You also looked into what it's like to cross the river on foot and by bus. You even investigated boating options. I'm relieved you didn't try to swim. But what made you want to do this just conceptually?
Well, because the Missouri River is such a huge part of our city's identity historically. We've been crossing the river. You know, there used to be the Annie Cade Ferry. And just kind of looking into that, you know, the constructions of these bridges, how we've developed these communities north and south of the river. There was a time before we just got in our cars. You know, Kansas City, I think it's 85% use cars to drive alone, you know, or drive themselves to and from work. And so it is a smaller amount of people who are finding other means, but still that community exists. And I was just trying to think of what are the pathways, because I think that was a question I hadn't thought
about.
So, like,
is the river just a barrier for those people?
Yeah, well, but also, I mean, you think about it, rivers shouldn't be thought of as barriers in a way. They connect so many things. And I think that's maybe what got me thinking about it. I have been on the Missouri River on a boat for a story I did about pallid sturgeons, and that also got me thinking, like, I had never been on the Missouri River before in that capacity, and just thinking how, if you wanted to boat, how would you do it? Now, it is not something that I think the Army Corps of Engineers would recommend. There's a lot of things to consider as far as, well, there are only so many ramps and there's safety things to consider, but it is possible, but probably not practical. And there'll be more in depth about that I'm going to make a post that'll be on kcur.org that'll describe that a little bit better for you in case you are looking into.
Well,
voting.
I want to get into each of the modes of transportation you tried a little bit later, but let me introduce our next guest. Cindy Baker is here from the Kansas City Area Transportation Authority. Hi, Cindy.
Hello, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Fantastic.
Is connecting the area north of the river to the rest of the city a big priority for you and your organization?
It is a priority. It's a priority for us, but frankly, it's been a priority in the city since, you know, the early 1900s. Even before our road system was fully developed, there was interurban rail from St. Joe to downtown Kansas City. So I, like Suzanne, think that the river is more of a connector than it is a barrier.
Does the river, though, present any major transit challenges that people might not recognize or that are maybe more complicated than we'd think?
Frankly, I think that in terms of transit, the challenges are trying to provide enough transit in an area that is very sprawled. But that you could say the same thing, whether you're going to Blue Springs or Lee Summit or Johnson County. So it's not, to me, the physical river that is the barrier to providing more transit.
Are there other places in the city that are like unique, present unique kinds of challenges to move people across, whether it's even just sprawl or mindset?
I think there's a lot of mindset. I think that, you know, I grew up in the Northland, so I can attest to the fact that, you know, from a young child, you didn't cross the Broadway Bridge. Oh my gosh, what was on the other side? But as our city, the entire region has developed, I think that those things have been overcome. We now offer 18 routes north of the river.
What do you mean? What kinds of routes?
18 bus routes, and 12 of them actually cross the river. So the connections going south and north are very available for people.
If you are someone who regularly crosses the river, call us up and let us know what works for you and what doesn't. 816-235-2888 is the number to call. You'll have the chance to share your observations with the city's transportation authority. 816-235-2888. So Cindy was just talking about the 18 bus routes. Suzanne, talk to me about crossing the river by bus.
I have crossed the river by bus a few times. I've taken the 129 up to the airport, which is something that I wasn't sure. I didn't know that that existed until just a few years ago also.
Where can you catch it?
At 10th and Main. And that's the other reason why I thought that that was a good place to start my bike ride, because that is such a hub, a transit hub for people to get to Johnson County, north of the river. And it was actually a really delightful experience. It took about 45 minutes. And as a person who's definitely asked for my share of rides to the airport, you know, for $1.50, it was pretty low stress. Now it has its fallbacks in that times that it runs, if you're catching a really early or late flight, it's not really possible. But I mostly explored walking, biking, and boating for the purposes of this research, because there are so many routes, and it's just so depends on where you're going. And it's the Northland's so huge. It seemed like the possibilities were endless. I talked to one woman who commutes pretty regularly, who had ditched her car, who was working downtown and found that taking the bus from the Northland to downtown was saving her a lot of money on parking and gas and things like that. So,
Cindy, I want to talk to you about a couple of these things. The airport is a frequently needed destination for people all over the city. What about this idea that the bus is maybe more useful in the middle of the day than for those early morning or later evening flights?
Yeah, you know, we need to improve our service to the airport. It works well if you've got times at just the right time, as Suzanne said, but we do need to somehow serve our airport a little bit better.
And what about this idea of commuters, like that it kind of depends on where you're going and that these are two really huge communities, but are people who live on one side of the river or the other, say they get a new job that requires them to cross the river and they don't already have a car, is that a real possibility in Kansas City, that wherever I live, I can get to some point across the river that I need to get to pretty efficiently?
Well, oh my gosh, it just so depends on the time of day. If you're going to work late at night, probably not. Our transit system built up around a sort of traditional commute, an 8 to 5. And over the many years and even decades, work has changed. The needs of people have changed. Transit has tried to keep up, but we do have some work to do in order to make it more flexible for more people.
When you're thinking about something like that, this issue of it depending on where you're trying to go or where you're trying to get from, are there areas in the Northland that are less well served by the bus routes? And if so, what explains that?
Sure. Well, the explanation is funding. And yes, there are some places. You know, if you want to travel within the Northland, not even crossing the river, those are some real obstacles, traveling, say, from Liberty to Parkville. And the reason that that is a challenge is that there's not enough funding to provide that service.
Where would the funding need to come from? I mean, why isn't there enough funding for it?
Well, right now, the amount of service that is out in our system is paid for by those individual cities. So in the Northland, for instance, Gladstone pays for the amount of service they have, North Kansas City, Riverside, and Kansas City, Missouri, et cetera. So there is not right now a sort of multi-jurisdictional funding source.
So I guess, how do communities decide how much to invest in buses?
Wow, that is truly dependent on their priorities, their own budgetary priorities. Most of their budgets are coming out of their general revenue. The Kansas City, Missouri is the only city that has a dedicated sales tax. So it is simply a matter of priorities, of which cities are, you know, their priorities are many.
I guess I'm curious how much ridership on those particular routes plays into it, because I could imagine like a chicken and egg type scenario where if a lot of people aren't riding the buses, then cities see that and say, well, why would we invest in this? But it requires the investment for it to be a usable
You're
route.
Absolutely right. We say the chicken and egg thing about every day in our world. And even when you have full ridership and high, what we would consider high ridership, that isn't necessarily going to pay for the service. So cities really have to make some tough decisions in terms of making transit a priority.
Let's consider walking for a second. Suzanne, what are the options for crossing the river on foot? There are, what, three major bridges?
Well, there are two bridges that you can walk on, and it's the same for biking, Heart of America and Shoto. Now, you see people walking on the Broadway Bridge, and that is I see it a lot, and it's really dangerous. And part of the thing that the reason for that is because the Heart of America Bridge to the Broadway Bridge is a mile apart, which that can take a long time walking. But then also, the spacing out of these bridges is making people walk really far out of their way. And I talked to Eric Rogers from Bike Walk KC, who kind of explained why you might see somebody walking on one of these, on something, say, like the Broadway Bridge.
When you're driving, it may seem like it's not a big deal to say, take the Broadway Bridge instead of the Heart America Bridge or the Bond Bridge. Those are all about a mile apart. And when you're driving, you know, that's maybe just a minute or two difference in terms of which bridge you choose. But if you're walking, for you to say detour over to the Heart of America Bridge, that's a 20-30 minute walk east, another 20 minute walk across the river, and then a 20-30 minute walk back west. And by that time, you know, you've gone an hour and a half out of your way. And so that's one of the reasons you do see people walking across places like the Broadway Bridge.
So explain a little bit what for those of us who have not imagined this is the problem with walking on the Broadway Bridge.
There is just no place really that you can, a really small sidewalk that is not meant to be a sidewalk. But the thing is people are trying to get to, there's some long-term hotels down there. There's some industrial jobs that are down there. People are just kind of commuting back and forth, and it's the most direct seeming, but it is not intended for that use, and that's the problem. So really the only two ways that you are supposed to walk are the Heart of America and the Shoto, which are 4 miles apart. So if you're anywhere in between there, you might be walking 2 miles one way or the other, depending on where you're trying to get to on the other side.
So Cindy, when you hear that sort of estimate of you could end up going an hour out of your way to get to the bridge that would safely take you across the river as a pedestrian, is that the kind of thing that the Transit Authority thinks about, or is that sort of outside of your realm?
No, we look at what we do as very multimodal. We try to incorporate access to bikes and also pedestrian access. When we make improvements at park and rides and streets, we always take into account that, first of all, you have to, in most cases, walk to get to the stop. So pedestrian access is very important to what we do.
What, Suzanne, you talked to some of the people who are out walking on the Heart of America Bridge, a bridge that is kind of outfitted for that. We're going to hear from some of them in a second, but was there a lot of foot traffic out there?
So I went on a Friday at 4 o'clock and I saw about seven people. I say about because there was one guy who was on his way up. four of which were walking, three who were biking. That's one of the things that got me thinking about, man, I wonder how many people do just cross this every day, and have we ever counted? And we haven't done that. Maybe I think the Mid-America Regional Council, like I said, is looking into doing more widespread counting efforts for biking and pedestrians. I was surprised, and I stopped and talked to quite a few of them, which I think we're going to hear from in just a minute.
Let's hear from some of the people Suzanne encountered.
I walk pretty often, but I think last time I walked here, I walked on the other side of the river. That was about maybe a year ago, and that was kind of scary. So I just actually found this way to walk today, so this is a little bit better.
Where are you coming from?
I was over at the health clinic for a job, drug test.
Do you think that the river is a barrier? Like, living in this city, do you not go over as often because it's hard to get access?
Of course, yes. Especially to North Kansas City, yeah. Because of the walk.
Where are you going to?
51st and Prospect. I don't even know where that is.
So how did you find out about this route?
Somebody said that I should take this way, not the Broadway Bridge, because there's a thing you can walk or ride a bike on.
You were thinking about walking on the Broadway Bridge?
Yeah, well, I didn't know there was another one. I just got here like a week and a half ago.
Where are you from?
Columbia.
So do you know about how much time you're going to be walking for?
I have no idea. I have no idea even where I'm going.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
Sorry, I was trying to catch up with you guys.
Oh, that's cool. Do you want to pull over?
Are you guys touring?
Yeah.
So are you guys, like, packing out right now?
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
We're on our way outside of town.
So how far are you trying to get?
Today?
We have no idea. Man. We kind of just go until we can't go anymore.
We loaded up on food.
We're thinking of heading to Seattle and eventually down the coast, but we're really open to it.
And when did you start?
About 26 days ago.
We're just fulfilling wanderlust, so we just kind of go wherever the wind pushes us.
Yeah. We've actually never been west of Missouri.
Yep.
Who did we just hear from, Suzanne?
We just heard from Corey Clemens and Katie Glazier. That was the couple that was touring to Seattle. And then before that, Sarah Jensen and Dion Bowens. And the thing about all four of them is all four of them had never been on the Heart of America Bridge before. I thought that was just so interesting to me that in that small sample of time, four people were experiencing that for the first time and their takeaway from it all.
Yeah. You know, what struck me is that other than the travelers, you mostly ran into people who had kind of extenuating circumstances arise who don't normally have to cross the river, but something came up. Their feet was what they had, so off they went.
And that's just what you do. You figure out a way to cross. I mean, both of them also had gone on the Broadway Bridge the year before. Sarah almost went on the Broadway Bridge. Somebody tipped her off to not do that. I think it's just telling that if you don't know, you might go on the Broadway Bridge. And for Sarah, it kind of was telling to me, if you were just coming to Kansas City and didn't really know much about the city or the ways to cross, and you wanted to go to the Northland or vice versa, you may not know that there's only a couple ways to go and that it can be quite an investment of time if you are just planning on walking.
And that whole issue of the danger of someone crossing the Broadway Bridge on foot, Cindy, what are the challenges involved in maybe thinking about making that safer for pedestrians?
Wow. I think it's, you know, it takes planning. And that I know that MoDOT and others tried to take advantage of those opportunities when they redid the Kitbon Bridge. And that's why we have the improvements we have on the Heart of America and Shoto. I think similar planning is going to have to take place for Broadway and perhaps sometime in the future, the Kitbon Bridge. I know there's a need for it.
It also highlighted for me, I mean, this woman does not know where she is trying to end up. But if I were trying to cross the bridge in the other way and I just had an address north of the river, I might be just as lost. So this really highlights how little we know of the other side of the river, whatever the other side of the river may be.
Yeah, and it helps to do some research if you can ahead of time. But if you don't have the luxury of being able to do that, you kind of just end up where you are. And I hope she made it.
I hope so, too. Let's talk to Clinton. He's called us to join the conversation. Hi, Clinton.
Hi, how are you guys?
Great. What can you share?
Well, I manage and operate Express Employment Professionals. We're a staffing and recruiting agency right in the Northland off Armour and Swift. And one of the biggest challenges we face is we have hundreds of jobs available for individuals coming from the inner city area and the Paseo Park District, the other industrial park areas where the transit system doesn't go. These individuals aren't able to make it, or they have to turn down jobs because they're not there. And this next fall, we have, because of the pickup of all the auto production, there's going to be hundreds of thousands of jobs available. But because and they run 24/7, and because the way the transit system works, they're going to have to turn down these jobs. And these are individuals who need these opportunities. I mean, they're $10 to $12 an hour, but it's an opportunity for them to start building back to, you know, get a vehicle and get their apartment and getting things going again.
So access to jobs puts really a lot at stake when we think about transit, especially across the river, because we've heard that walking across the river, though possible, though even enjoyable, is really time consuming.
Yeah, access to jobs is the number one issue in providing public transit, and that's why about 70% of our riders are going to work. Unfortunately, we're not able to serve. The Northland especially is so spread out that we have to go where there's the greatest density. We've gone through several, about every 10 years, we do what we call a comprehensive service analysis. We did one in 2012 and made a lot of improvements in our system, including in the Northland. And we were able to meet a lot more needs. But there is, you know, admittedly, there are more areas that need transit that we still need to work toward.
So something like an employer that's going to have a bunch of new jobs, would that be on the Transportation Authority's radar as like a need?
It is typically. And it's so helpful when people will tell us in the development stages. We try to stay in touch with development as it's going on 2 and 3 years ahead of time so that we can anticipate where those jobs are going to be either relocating or moving into our area.
Suzanne, what's the big takeaway for you coming out of this exploration?
I think is that if we have infrastructure, people will utilize it. I think that's the big thing. If we create pathways, people will be more likely to get on their bicycle or walk. And once you actually do it, and I understand doing that every day for transportation has its ups and downs, but it also can just also be an enjoyable thing. But going beyond that, you know, creating more bike lanes and routes that are safe for pedestrians, and just so they're considered in the planning process, because it is a significant part of the community and a lot of the zip codes that are in, like the downtown River Market Northeast area, that people who are using public transit and biking and walking as their main source. So the more infrastructure, the more the better.
Cindy Baker of the KCATA, what is it for you? What are you taking back with you to the office today?
Wow, that the need, there seems to be an unlimited need for transit, and that staying on top of where these developments are coming from are critical.
Thanks for joining us, Cindy. And Suzanne Hogan, let's go on a bike ride to the Northland. I think that sounds fun.
Yeah, I would love to.
When Central Standard returns, what exactly do we mean when we talk about the Northland? That's coming up. Don't go away. I'm Gina Kaufman, and I want to get right into this issue of how the Northland is and isn't connected to the city on the whole. Part of that is a matter of pure geography, as we've heard, but some of it could be in our heads. Is it in our habits, in our politics? Our next guest is Amy Neal. She's the managing editor of 3 Northland newspapers, the Liberty Tribune, the Kearney Courier, and the Gladstone Dispatch. Hi, Amy. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
We're also joined by Deb Herman, who's represented the Northland as a city councilwoman. She's now the CEO of Northland Neighborhoods, Inc. Hi, Deb.
Good morning.
So I want to ask each of you something just out of the gate. Could you define the Northland? What are its boundaries? What's included within it?
I think in the most general terms, it is Clay and Platte counties. Maybe not the northernmost parts of those counties, but in general, Platte and Clay County.
Where do you get too far north for it to be the Northland?
I suppose once it stops being suburban and it starts being more rural, I think that would be a good place where it starts to become you're driving through countryside. Although there are pockets of country in the Northland, you know, even within Kansas City proper.
Yeah, I was going to ask you where you think that happens. Like, has that happened by Weston in your view?
You know, for me, I don't normally include Weston when I'm thinking Northland.
So that's further north than the Northland.
It is for me.
Interesting. Okay, Deb, what about you?
I would agree broadly. It's Clay and Platte counties. I don't know. Should we talk to the people in Weston or Kearney? Do they consider themselves Northlanders? I'm not sure that they do. So I would agree with Amy that there's some gradual, the more rural areas.
So it's more of something that you can sense that you have departed from the city surroundings and you're in places that are more sort of self-contained.
Yes, I'd say so.
Okay. So, but we are talking about a pretty big place, two counties. I wonder if you guys think it's problematic that we have this term that kind of lumps it all together, that people who live outside of those counties might have visited one place within them and think that that represents the whole Northland.
That's a difficult question, but I think that there are the individual communities in the Northland are pretty well defined. You know, Parkville isn't the same as Liberty. I mean, they each have their unique, you know, downtowns, their unique parks, their unique attractions. So I think that there's a lot of difference there, but there's this, I guess, unifying feel of, well, we're from the Northland. We're from up north.
Can you describe that unifying feel?
I don't know that I can.
If it's the act of having to cross the river.
It may be. I mean, and I guess for you, you may think of it as crossing the river, and I just think of it as staying put. but there are a lot of people who live in the Northland who might work, you know, south of the river, or you know, we, you know, definitely lots of events we go to. But I think that there is, there's just this unification that we aren't south of the river.
I think that the river, it's a boundary. All neighborhoods, all areas have boundaries. But I think that the river is so inarguably evident. No one questions where it is.
You can't pretend it's not there.
You might wonder, what are the boundaries of Waldo? Even what are the boundaries of Grandview? And those people aren't real sure. You could be driving and, you don't know. The river is, there's no question when you've crossed it. There's no question that you're north or you're south. It's very identifiable. Now, I would say an interesting thing that happened in 2011, Northland Neighborhoods was incorporated in 1996 and began as a Kansas City organization.
Doing what?
Providing services to neighborhoods and to low-income individuals with housing needs, and started off as a Kansas City organization. When I first went to work there in 2011, that summer we had a very serious, some called it a microburst, very serious thunderstorm that left much of the Northland, much of our area without power, lots of downed trees. I went to work the next morning, and there must have been 35 people there looking for help. Help to get a tree out of their driveway, help to get their power turned back on. And they were from Kansas City, Gladstone, Clycomo. They were from all over. And I thought, these folks don't think Kansas City owns the Northland. I mean, that they really, you know, it is, the Northland's theirs too. And Northland Neighborhoods has become more of a regional organization.
So, I mean, I guess, yeah, that there's maybe even just this idea that Northland organizations serve only the Northland that would perpetuate an idea that we're all isolated in our separate areas. Do you think there's a certain amount of isolation on one side of the river or the other?
Much less so. We have neighborhood organization capacity building programs and features at Northland Neighborhoods. And recently we have people from all over the metro coming. the metro would be stretching it, but certainly from south of the river, from neighborhoods way south of the river, that see an opportunity. And when you bring neighborhood people together, I don't think in walking in the room you would know who was Northland or Southland at all.
Just as a point of clarification for, I think, a lot of people, what about this North Kansas City versus Kansas City North distinction? I mean, I have often suspected that they named these two places just to confuse me personally.
Predates me by many, many years, but North Kansas City is a unique and individual city within itself, surrounded by Kansas City. In all sides, but it is its own city with its own elected representation and police force and fire department. Kansas City North is those areas north of the river in Kansas City.
This is very confusing politically.
If you live there.
Right. Really? If you live there, this isn't confusing? No.
Right. I mean, we talked about this earlier before the show, but it's kind of the litmus test of whether somebody's from the Northland, whether they know the difference between North Kansas City or Kansas City North, you know. But
if you live there, this makes a certain amount of sense and feels logical?
Sure, because North Kansas City has its own mayor, has its own, you know, council, has, like you said, has its own fire department.
So it's like the Vatican within Rome or something?
Well, I suppose. but I think that there's sometimes confusion about really what Kansas City is. I mean, north of the river, that we've got all of these little well, some of them are not so little anymore, but we've got Gladstone, we've got Parkville, we've got Riverside, Liberty, Kearney, Smithville, and we have North Kansas City. But so many people just say North Kansas City, but what they really mean is Kansas City North. And we just add that North qualifier to let them know we're not south of the river, but it's Kansas City.
What are some of the issues that people in neighborhoods and communities within the Northland care about that, for lack of a better word, Southlanders might not be aware of?
Well, I know you guys talked a lot about transportation earlier, but I mean, that's an issue. The transportation is different. Getting from the Northland south of the river is fairly easy, but getting from one side of the Northland to the other using public transportation is just not an option. But, you know, I think that as far as city services go, it's the same challenges whether you live north or south, you know. Some weeks trash pickup might be spot on, and some days you might have to call and be like, why hasn't my trash been picked up? I mean, I don't think that there's a specific big, you know, lack of service or extra services that we're getting or anything. I think it's, you know, the challenges are the same.
Deb, are there specific communities that you would say have their own particular challenges? And that's not to say that there aren't places north of the river or south of the river that also have those challenges, but that play out in a specific way in those communities.
I think the southern end of Clay County, I think if the urban core were redrawn on the map, it would include southern Clay County. I think that there's a misunderstanding by some. I mean, I have talked to people and talked to elected officials that say or believe everyone that lives in the Northland lives in a big house.
That it's all suburban.
And it's all wonderful. And, the birds always sing. It's just a wonderful thing. We don't have those issues. And we have neighborhoods in southern Clay County that are facing huge challenges. We have a school district, North Kansas City. All of our school districts do a great job. But North Kansas City School District is facing those challenges, embracing those. For a school district that's become much more urban very quickly. We're very proud of that. So, I think that there's lots of misunderstanding.
Deb, what was it like to represent a district north of the river in the larger city council? Did you come to city issues from a different perspective at all?
I don't believe so. And I was an at-large council person, so I represented the whole city. And when you talk to neighborhood people, and it doesn't matter whether they live in Kansas City or Gladstone or Raytown, everyone wants safe streets. They want livable neighborhoods to raise their kids. They want basic services. And I don't think that there is a difference between Kansas Citians, Northlanders, Southlanders, or other neighborhoods or other municipalities. They're, you know, everyone We may need infrastructure. They need their old infrastructure renewed. So it's
I've got to jump in here, but when Central Standard returns, we'll hear more from our guests and we'll invite you into the conversation. If you live in the Northland, what do you think defines the place you call home? Do you want to feel more connected to the rest of the city? If so, what gets in the way? 816-235-2888. And we're back. I'm Gina Kaufman, and we've got a little time left for this conversation about the Northland, its identity, and its connectedness to the rest of the city. Call 816-235-2888 to get in on the discussion. Don't put it off because we're cruising toward the end of the show. Hello again, Deb Herman.
Good morning.
And hello again to you, Amy Neal.
Thank you.
Amy, when did you move to the Northland?
In 2001.
What drew you there?
Well, I had been living in Alabama, and my husband and I wanted to move back to the Midwest, and so it was a good spot for us. But the thing that keeps us here is one my work with the newspapers. But we enjoy it. I mean, it's not a far drive to anything, whether it's something south of the river or north of the river. Lots of things going on, and it seems like the cities in the Northland are adding things all the time, you know, whether that's concerts, you know, free weekend concerts, that sort of thing, or, you know, public art. So there's lots happening in the Northland.
You work for papers in three different distinct Northland communities. Tell us a little bit about each of them. Let's start with Gladstone. I read in the Gladstone Dispatch that they're getting a restore, which will eventually mean investment in the community through Habitat for Humanity projects. Mm-hmm. Is this investment, like, tell me about the need for that investment within this community.
Sure. So Gladstone is unique in that it's landlocked. I mean, Kansas City is all around it. And so Gladstone has really embraced the idea of, you know, renewing and redefining itself, its city center. Specifically, it's partnered with the school district, the North Kansas City School District, a few years back to build this aquatic center. It's partnering with Northwest Missouri State and I think the North Kansas City School District as well, and there may be some others there, partnering on this innovation campus, which is going to be an education center. But then it also has, it's recently built Linden Square, which is an amphitheater, and they have free outdoor concerts throughout the warm season. But Gladstone is just really, it doesn't have land that it can grow into, so it just has to reinvent itself where it's at. So I think that is probably the big thing that's defining Gladstone right now.
What about Kearney?
Kearney is growing. I mean, this is a town that I hope my numbers are close to correct. I want to say in the 70s was a town of, you know, about 1,000 people, and now it's around 10,000 people. And Kearney is also a place that they see that this growth has happened, and yet there's still a small town feel there, but they know that they also need the amenities, the infrastructure to support a growing population, and a population that's 10 times the size that it was just a few decades ago.
Is there concern that that infrastructure and those amenities would take away some of that small town feel?
I don't know that there is. I mean, whether you have 100 people or 100,000 people, when they flush the toilet, they expect something, a certain thing to happen. When they turn on the tap, they expect water to come out. So it's stuff that needs to happen no matter what. And I think that they've got a good, good city representatives, good city staff that really understand that that's a challenge and one that they have to face.
Talk to me about Liberty. One of the stories in the Liberty Tribune is about a former St. James Church location transforming into an event space. Is that an issue that the city's been sort of coalesced around, the fate of this church?
There's kind of there have been a few issues recently, including the fate of this church, of basically finding a new purpose or a new life for these locations that are near downtown. And there are multiple historic districts in Liberty. And so there are some restrictions there. And, you know,
are these abandoned structures?
Oh,
or just old structures?
The church, Both. I would say both. But in the case of the church, I believe it hasn't been used for anything in some time. But there are people who, you know, well, this is a neighborhood. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to see 100 people coming for a wedding reception right across the street from my house, which is understandable. And yet you also have this downtown that we want to keep thriving, you know, and the more people we can bring to downtown or close to downtown, you know, there's some benefits to that, but there is some challenges. But, you know, it's, you know, I think it all falls under growing pains, you know.
Just quickly, the cover story in online versions of all of these papers is that Clay County has started issuing same-sex marriage licenses. Is that like the talk of the community, or is that just something that you thought it was important to draw attention to?
You know, we thought it was important to draw attention to because it, you know, it is a big social shift across the country. Although I have to say, in Clay County, last I knew, as of yesterday afternoon, just a single couple had come in asking for a same-sex marriage license. So there wasn't a rush. You know, Jackson County had been issuing like same-sex marriage licenses for a while. So, you know, the thought is that people had probably gone there. But it's just one of those things that we are very hyper-local community newspapers. But when there's something like this that really, there are going to be kind of a trickle-down effects from a big shift like this. And we just want to make sure that people understand. And we felt it was really important to try and talk to as many people in our communities. What do you think about this ruling? Does it affect you personally? And so that's what we kind of tried to concentrate our coverage on.
Let's talk to Bill in the Northland. Hi, Bill.
Hi, this is Bill Skaggs. I served with Deb on the city council.
Hi, Bill.
Hi, Deb. How you doing? We were talking about the boundaries of the Northland. I think that I think of the Northland going all the way to 92 Highway. That's the northern extreme edge of Kansas City goes all the way to 92 Highway that runs from Platte City to Kearney.
Why do you think of 92 Highway as that boundary?
Well, that's the northern city limits of Kansas City. And while Deb and I were on the council, we kept Kansas City from expanding north of 92 Highway. We have about 320 square miles in Kansas City now. And when Kansas City started annexing north of the river, I think it was in the 50s. And communities like North Kansas City, Parkville, and Gladstone, and Liberty, had they expanded at that time, we wouldn't have a Kansas City North today. But for some reason or other, those city leaders didn't expand their cities out. And so Kansas City jumped around them and started annexing the areas that go, like I say, today all the way to 92 Highway.
And Bill, did you say that you had been part of wanting to prevent the city from expanding beyond 92 Highway?
Yes.
Why is that?
Yes. Why is that? Mm-hmm. I think our city services are stretched real thin today to get a policeman from downtown or from the North Patrol Station to 92 Highway right now. If traffic were good and the weather good, probably 15 minutes. Fire truck would take longer than that. So I think that just being able to provide city services to people is very important. And as I said before, we have 320 square miles that we need to take care of, snow removal, fire protection, police protection today, that we're spread pretty thin north of this river.
Let's hear from Deb Herman on this. Deb, do you want to add anything to those observations?
No, Bill, as always, Bill's got it. We did oppose an effort to expand Kansas City to annex an additional area based on we could not provide services. Staff came back and annexing another area without providing the services necessary wasn't acceptable to either one of us and apparently to the whole council because it didn't occur.
When you talk about services being stretched thin, is that something that you feel like is an issue that even with the boundaries being intact needs to be addressed in the Northland?
Oh, and not just the Northland. It's all over the city. And, you know, one thing that brought my family, my husband and I, to Kansas City is the wide open areas and huge yards. And, you know, you drive between neighborhoods, especially in the Northland, and you drive in wooded areas, and it's beautiful. However, as a elected official, I found out that it's really, really expensive to provide services when you are as sprawled out as Kansas City is. I hate the term sprawl, but it's what came to mind. I mean, the streets, the police, the fire. When you look at the cost for Kansas City per person to deliver those basic services, it is much higher than many other large cities, and it's because of the area we cover.
When you think about just Northland identity, are there words that come to mind, or is that notion just, is it too big of a place to have some kind of unifying character or personality?
A character that's different from Kansas City total? I don't think so. I mean, you know, first and foremost, I think we're Kansas Cityans. As, you know, those that, as far as Northland, I don't think so. I don't think that there is a separate identity.
We're getting a lot of head shaking. So I'm going to call that the answer is that our two in-studio guests don't see that as a unifying identity. If listeners want to keep discussing that amongst themselves, you can do that on Twitter. We are at KCURCST. And that's all the time we have. Deb Herman, CEO of Northland Neighborhoods, Inc. and former city councilwoman. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Amy Neal, managing editor of the Liberty Tribune, the Kearney Courier, and the Gladstone Dispatch. I'll be following your reporting.
Thank you.
This conversation has been part of KCUR's ongoing series, Beyond Our Borders. We've explored major dividing lines in our city, Troost, State Line, the Wyandotte-Johnson County line. Now we're zooming in on the Missouri River. You can catch up with the whole series at kcur.org/beyondourborders. To listen back to today's show, go to kcur.org/centralstandard. You can do that later today. Tomorrow, in honor of the American Folk Art exhibit at the Nelson Atkins Museum, Central Standard asks, what is folk art? Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stick around for Up to Date next.